Hello, and welcome to Luminato's Illuminating Ideas program. I'm Alex Rand, the curator of this series. Today we're listening to Artists in Conversation, and we're joined by Christine Brubaker, the lead creator of Henry G20, and Umbreen Inayet, the co-curator of New Monuments, which is co-produced with our friends at Canadian Stage. Together, they discuss how they bring activism into their creative work, the role the City of Toronto plays in each of their projects, and how the art we're creating is reflective of the turning point the world is currently going through. This conversation was recorded in early June of 2021. I hope you enjoy.
Hi, my name is Christine Brubaker, and I am coming to you today from Treaty 7 territory of the Blackfoot Confederacy, Mokinsis, which is also known as the City of Calgary. The Treaty 7 territory, Mokinsis, is also home to the Tsuut'ina and the Stoney Nakoda Nations and Métis Region number 3. So I am the director and the playwright of a piece that's going to be Illuminato called Henry G20. And originally conceived as a stage play, Henry G20 takes a hard look at the conflicts between the civilian protesters and the police from the G20 summit in 2010. Just for a little reminders, the G20 summit is an amalgam of the 20 largest economies in the world, and they descended on Toronto in that period in 2010. And there was thousands and thousands and thousands of protesters went on the street, and over a period of 6 days, it is also infamous now for the largest amount of infractions of charter rights in a period of time, and still considered the largest mass arrest in Canadian history. So the conversation that we're still investigating in this over the years is really the role of policing and the how they respond to dissent within civilian communities.
Hi, that was lovely. Thank you for doing that intro for me. I cannot wait to hear more about your work, Christine. So excited. My name is Umbreen, coming to you from Toronto on Treaty 13, otherwise known as the Toronto Purchase, not so much a treaty. Originally from Pakistan, born and raised in Scarborough, so shout out to Scarborough always. I, in terms of Luminato, am working on a piece called New Monuments, and New Monuments is being called a film, but it really is an intervention. And it's a tool that is illustrating what a new world could look like. And it's based on this notion of, art mirrors reality. And we're in the time of social practice where the people are the art. And we're trying to illustrate what a new world could look like while reflecting on historic and modern day subjugations that really need to be erased along with other things along the way. So that's what I'm doing for New Monuments. Being a brown girl subject to racism is definitely the thing that started me at a very, very, very young age. I dealt with racism growing up. You know, I have a Muslim name. I'm not Muslim. You know, I went to a Catholic school. I'm not Catholic. I had my grandparents walk me to school when it wasn't cool to do so, and ate rotis when people were eating McDonald's. So if you could imagine all of the bullying that I experienced as a child that was darker skin colored. And, you're dealing with your parents trying to become part of the culture, but not want to give up their past. And, you know, my dad worked in a factory. My mom was a babysitter. And really in Pakistan, my dad was an art teacher and my mom was a nurse. And so that transition, I'm sure, had a toll on them. And so when I would come home, my mother would create this world, like it was called like Little Pakistan, where we weren't allowed to speak English. We had to change into our cultural clothing. We had to learn how to cook and write and read in Urdu. And at that time, I resented it like crazy. But as I grew up, I realized it's because that's what a sense of safety looked and felt like. And so I was sort of toying between these two worlds. And eventually I met a social worker who said, no, you know, you're dealing with racism, because I didn't know what it was that I was really dealing with. And after I met her at the very young age of, I don't even know, 9 or 10 years old, she changed my life. And that's when I decided to become a social worker. And that's what put me on the journey that I'm on today. And the reason why that I switched from direct practice, because I was doing a lot of, you know, community work. And then I'm a trained psychotherapist. I was doing therapy. The reason why I switched into creativity and essentially what I call art therapy in the public realm is because I realized when you've gone through trauma, you know, especially heavy trauma, it's not something that you can just easily talk about. But once you start telling stories and once you start illustrating what, you know, that picture looked like, it allows you to paint a new one along the way in a safe space. So that's me in a nutshell. Over to you, Christine.
I love that you frame this up inside of your family, because when we talk about what are those pivotal moments that kind of activate us or animate us or put us onto new paths. So I grew up in a fundamentalist Christian family, Mennonite background, not old order Mennonites, but, you know, inherently profoundly conservative. I had no idea how conservative it was. And as well, and socially conservative too, right? Like, it was a little bit of a secret that we would play cards in the family. I would go to church probably 3-4 times a week. Yeah, there was always this disconnect that I had with what I was having to occupy. And a lot of it had to do with story. So when you say that, I'm bringing. And I think I had huge desire to tell all sorts of stories, ones that existed way outside the constraints that I was given as a child in it. And the interesting thing about the Mennonites is the Mennonites inherently occupy this very political space. They're pacifists. They, in Europe, they were kicked out because of religion. It goes on and on about the background of it. And yet my parents were deeply suspicious of any kind of political action, even though my father himself and my grandfather had, they had to kind of deal with that question of being pacifists and whether you would actually join the army in World War I and II, in fact. So there was an interesting tension and a story that we never really quite told. So I would see that my political heart really started to bloom when I hit university and got outside of my family home and started to meet people who would urge me to literally act. So again, one of the biggest moments I remember, I was part of this Mennonite peace group at university, and we decided to go to Ottawa to protest the low-level flying over Innu territory. And we went for a 2-day basically demonstration in front of the Department of National Defense. And again, I kind of remember feeling the surge and the power and the need to take action. And I remember coming home and telling my father about it, and him, his kind of comment being essentially like, well, what good does that do? And at the first time in my life, I said, well, what good does sitting here at the table do, Dad? So anyway, that was a critical moment, I think, in my activism. And then I don't think it was a clear road and a trajectory to that, but I think I actually found an alignment for my art practice and my set of values that I needed to start pursuing. Freedom to step outside of the boundaries that had been drawn pretty clearly around me. As someone who is, I'm actually navigating a real life circumstance. So one of the questions that keeps coming up for us in this, so we have again centered our story around a character we're calling Henry, and she's young and she's a rebel and she's is an amalgam of a number of real life activists for us that felt that we did research into, well, I won't name them right now because we've departed from things. But there was no one real leader of the Toronto Community Mobilization Network. And in fact, it was precisely not meant to have a leader. So, but for our theatrical intent to try and kind of locate the heart of this story, we we created a narrative to make sense of this. And so it's really interesting working with people, many people who were part of the G20 protest themselves, who have been on the ground inside of Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, a number of these organizations that were like in the thick of it. It's just this constant question between how do we continue to tell the truth, pursue the truth of these events that happened, and also be true to the theatrical narrative, even though it isn't a play anymore, it's a pod play with an augmented reality experience. That's another whole piece of it. So this tension between every once in a while kind of going, well, Adam, nobody was actually arrested in the afternoon. We haven't been arrested in the morning, assaulted in the morning. So that's going to be our inciting incident. So constantly our thing is, well, I'm just going to pull up my theatrical license here and say that I have permission to drive this car in this direction. So it's a really interesting line between the impact of the event and the actual minutiae of it, and trying to thread those together in a way through the power of narrative that can activate imagination, inspire, take you back, recall your own memories, think about your relationship to policing right now. How does this reflect? How does this continue on? So I'm curious how theatrical license might sit inside of your particular approach to your work, Amreen.
I always think about, you know, how do you make something that you can't unsee? Because I really feel like people have 30 seconds. You know, I've done 15 years of Nuit Blanche, and literally there was the 30-second rule. Like, you have to capture people in 30 seconds, otherwise you're going to lose them. And I always took that to heart, because I was like, well, I have a message that I want to get across to 1.2 million people, and it better be strong. Otherwise, I'm going to lose them, and they're going to go on to the next thing and the next thing. So part of what we did with New Monuments and everything I do, I always try and make sure it's that thing that you can't unsee and can't not feel. Mm-hmm. It has to have that power behind it. It just has to. It has to stop you in your tracks. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, big, huge, gigantic things, even though I love doing that. It can be a small gesture, but what else is happening when that small gesture is happening? So that's all you see, you know? So I think about it in terms of that. And when you do that, yeah, it has to look good. You know, it has to be professional. You have to make something that people will take seriously. I worked in the community, and I really wanted to do something that was on the scale of Broadway, on the scale of Hamilton, on the scale of, you know, a Vogue cover. Because why not? Why doesn't this message deserve that level of artistry? And yeah, that involves magic, and that involves creativity and artistic license. Because if you don't, and you're just literally going by the book, then, you know, you might lose people. Hmm. And then you've missed your point. And so I think part of that magic and artistry is definitely, as long as your intentions are good, part of what we do. Hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the exciting part. Like, I use the word sexy a lot. I'm like, we have to make this museum sexy. And then they're like, that's not sexy. I'm like, I don't mean sexy that way. I mean sexy like there attractive. Has to be that. Yeah, like, you have to not be able to unsee, like, the Beyonce Lemonade video, you mm-hmm. know, or the Mona Lisa or the sun, or, you know, I think that even if it's for 30 seconds, you have to put all of that care, because that's how much we value the eyes that are on it too, to say, like, we actually respect you and we want to make sure it's something that has that gravitas that you can't look away from. And so the artistry is 100,000% a part of it. I mean, I always say, I don't know, would it, you know, could it look like this? Could it look like that? You know, what does this look like? Because, you know, people are going to take their phone and they're going to do a screen grab. And what are they going to get from that? So even when I produce artworks, I go around photographing it, because I know that that's how it's going to translate. It's actually through the image.
Well, that's fascinating, because we have made this story, Henry G20, that was originally meant to be a stage play with 30 actors underneath the Bentway, you know, outside on the 10th anniversary. And we have made it into a pod play, a 5-episode pod play, just It is exciting, but it's also terrifying because it's just through the word then, right? Just through the aural experience. So we have a massive sound design going alongside. And the interesting thing is because we have attached ourselves to, I would say, the Shakespeare wagon, changed it drastically, but that so much of the image lives inside of the word and the poetry and the feel and the meter of it. So we also have this augmented reality experience, which is to bring a visual portal to the experience as well.
Yeah. So you're entering into this sort of like immersive space where the words illustrate the picture, and that's the same thing, right? So I would be thinking as what you're saying, what picture does it come to your mind? How can people relate to this?
Yeah.
And that's equally as exciting. I listen to audiobooks all day by choice because I feel a connection when I hear the words of another human. You know, like I listen, you know, I'm listening to Jay Shetty, I'm listening to 100 Foot Journey, which is about this restaurant tour, just because I wanted that fantastical sort of, you know, I don't know, world that had nothing to do with self-help and activism at the same time. And just by listening to this chef, I was escaping. And I swear to God, I put that on the end of my workday, because that to me, there's some freedom there. Like being in this auditory world where you don't actually associate it with anything you know. So well, I think,
Well, I was going to say, it's like a good book, right? Mm-hmm. When you open it up, you have your own images that you create. Mm-hmm. So that that's that wonderful freedom where you become a collaborator with the material in that moment. And I do think it's interesting. I don't know, but I haven't seen any statistics, but I imagine podcasts, audiobooks, all those things have gone through the roof in COVID times, right?
They have, yeah, 100%. I remember I actually read a book, though, called Black Girl in Love with Herself by Trey Anthony. And I actually felt like she was my friend for some reason. I was like, she sees me. And I sent her a note and I said, I feel like you're my friend and I'm carrying you around in this book with this book, you know, and she does podcasts, she does interviews, and I could hear her voice. And she wrote back and she said, well, I am your friend. And I was like, whoa. I was so starstruck that I built a relationship with this person that sometimes when you meet the people you look up to, they're not who you want them to be. And that's the magic of audio and storytelling, even in the rawest form. You build a relationship to it without layering an impression of association of this thing, you know, reminds you of this person and that person. So it's all magic at the end of the day, right? And that's what we're doing. With good intentions. Sometimes I find it creeps up and I go, oh, could it be that we're in a new space? Like, you know, gender is being questioned and roads names are being advocated to be changed and relationships are not titled in the same way and monuments are, and I sometimes feel like, wow, could it be, you know, could there be this amazing new world where we all looked back going, whoa, remember that life before 2022 or whatever? And I think art plays a massive role in that because it's the language of emotion. And, you know, you look at art to feel something, you listen to something to feel something, you read something to feel something. And of course, intellect is there, but the emotions lead the way. And I love that. I think we're heading towards a humanitarian society where emotions are being talked about much more, you know, mental health, quote unquote, whatever that is being talked about all the time where I, you know, it's kind of like life, but I'm just like, great. People are acknowledging that, yeah, there's trauma, there's anxiety, there's depression, there's questioning, there's all the things. And it's part of this life that we had all made. What happens when we start shifting towards a new life? What does that look like? So, I mean, I love even seeing fashion campaigns being changed. I love seeing that commercials are all changed. You know, people are taking part in buying things differently. And it's a movement that's coming about. And art is leading the way because all we consume is culture, especially during 2020. I mean, God, everyone's been on their phones watching videos, listening to things. I mean, entrepreneurship is like going through the roof. And I think it's exciting because you can really, you know, when I was 9 years old, I wrote a play about racism because I wanted people to feel what it felt like to have experienced that. And so I think art is a guiding light, you know, and a tool, and kudos to those people who have been doing it, you know, the whole time. So when we think about the fact that the veil is being lifted on issues around oppression and racism and violence and colonialism, I mean, it was always there. We were always feeling it. I just feel a little bit validated now going, oh, right, you call it microaggression. I just call it aggression, micro or macro. How about it's just my entire life? So yeah, I think, you know, art can provide a sense of comfort too during this time to say like, yeah, you know, I see you, I hear you, you've always been here. And we're changing the gaze now, we're shifting the gaze on what you used to see before and creating new places, a new seat at the table for people who haven't been seen through massive forms of consumption, which is what we're doing right now, is all art, because we've all been at home for 2 years. But Christine, would love to hear about what you think.
Oh, so many things I'd love to respond to in what you said. I'm also wondering, are we at a turning point? I'm hopeful, so cautiously hopeful. And I mean, just to anchor it in two things I've been hearing even over the past weekend. Right now, my focus really tends to be on the nature of policing and relationships to communities, many different communities. So, but looking at what's happening in the Kamloops residential school, and how, you know, the RCMP have announced they're going to do an investigation. And so you say, great, RCMP, do an investigation. Back the fuck off, RCMP, because you're actually the problem. But part of the dialogue being that they're saying, but we're going to actually follow the Indigenous leaders. We're going to follow their lead. So if that's true, fantastic. Where I think back to a year ago, literally a year ago last June, when I think Brenda Ludley, who is the head of the RCMP, kind of came forward and said, oh, there's no racism in the RCMP. So, you know, this is literally 12 months ago. So I kind of say, change. Is it possible? Is it possible the vocabulary is changing? If we change our vocabulary, do we change the way we think? Do we change the way we act? And then the other piece about it, literally on the news this morning, I hear about how the Calgary police force is reallocating $8 million of their budget to community health groups. And the police didn't get to talk about it, the community health groups did. So to address the issues that we all know, that police do not have the tools, the experience, the skills to deal with many, many of the things they are sent out to do. So again, let's be honest, it's only $8 million of a $400 million budget is not nearly enough. But would this have happened a year ago? I don't know. So cautiously optimistic that as we make space for stories, as we, for me, centering the stories of individuals, centering the stories of communities through many different forms, through art, because art is the place that we, again, as you're saying, Umbreen, it hits us emotionally. There's catharsis inside of it. We feel, we think differently. The beauty of image is it can have multiple meanings, right? So it allows entry points for many, many different ways of being. So I am hopeful. I always believe in art. The art will continue, and that art has been made, and artists have been ringing the bell for a long time. But is the art actually getting through now? Are the larger, deeper messages starting to permeate the kind of stasis of comfort and ultimately capitalistic proprietorial wall building that means that we won't let go of what we have? And that we're starting to challenge that. So, I mean, that's a long-winded way of saying it feels like something is happening. I hope it will be enough. I don't know. Umbreen, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you, cautiously optimistic. Like, I feel like I'm slowly like a little earthworm. but I definitely feel that art is a vessel. You know, it's a vessel. It's holding a lot of grief. It's holding emotion. Mm-hmm. It's holding pride. It's holding a door open, And I think that to me, I feel like it's a huge responsibility on artists too, right? And the makers of the work. And for me, it's like, okay, the world is changing, but what do you do with the stuff along the way? Mm-hmm. Because if you don't process that stuff, like grief, like anger, it will show up somewhere else. You will abuse yourself or you will abuse others. Mm-hmm. And so I keep thinking about how can art be this tool where you give your stuff to it and let it go. You know what I mean? It's the conduit, it's the vessel. And hopefully, like, I feel like art will be a form of therapy in every single shape or form, whether you're listening to it, whether you're seeing an image, whether you're wearing a color, you know, whether you're listening to a song, it has to hold these emotions because we're still going through it. And so, you know, we need support along the way. And I'm hoping that art can literally be a vessel for therapy as we transition into this new world.
Thank you for listening to Artists in Conversation. I hope this episode stirred something in you, and we encourage you to share it. Follow Luminato on social media at Luminato Festival for more information about our programming. This episode was curated by Alex Rand and produced by Kimberly Pertell, with production management by Wilson Lin and Pip Bradford. Editing was by Lee Ken Agunbiade, and the music was created by G.R. Grit. Thanks again for listening.